Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome to this week's show. Joining me, as we do every week, Gretchen and Bill, my co-hosts. Welcome to User Friendly.
Hello there.
Hello.
So we record most of the time from our home studios now. This is a change that was made during COVID. We still have access to the studio, you know, downtown, but it's just been easier this way. And I just want to kind of preface this because Bill, who records out of Nevada, is having thunderstorms. So if you hear some rumbling in the background, it isn't your imagination or your stomach. Well, maybe it is, but it's probably the thunderstorm. So, so I actually do miss that from Northern Nevada. I love the thunderstorms down there and the smell of the, I want to say asbestos. How about sage?
asbestos. Oh my goodness.
Asbestos. Yeah, that would be bad. And that is not a problem in Northern Nevada. There are problems there, but that's not one of them. But it was really just an experience. You're in the desert. It starts raining. Everything cools off. I remember growing up with that, but it doesn't seem to happen as much anymore. So it's kind of fun, Bill, to hear that you're actually getting to see that again.
Yeah, it's been nice.
So anyway, we've had a little rain up here too. Not quite as dramatic, but it's been nice too. So, you know, it's just, I appreciate it. I guess living in the Pacific Northwest, if I didn't like rain, that probably would be some kind of an insurmountable problem, but I do. So, you know,
yep.
But like everybody else, when you get to about April and it's been gray for 4 months, then you are ready for a little bit of sun. But, yeah. You know, as the webbing's growing between your toes and fingers and stuff. Anyway. That being said, it is just cool to hear that's going on. All right. So that was an interesting little tangent. Why don't we circle back here? What do we have in the news this week?
Captain America reboots for present day era.
All right. So this is something that is going to be happening that we will be asking Comic Friendly 2.0's host Michael about, because he's going to be able to talk about this a lot better than I can. But basically the 411 on it is that they're starting an arc with Captain America number 6, which will go on sale in December, takes place in the present day as Captain America deals with the direct aftermath of Doom's fail. And if you don't know who that is, read the comic books or ask Michael, because that's what I'm going to yes. do. Following something called One World Under Doom. And it just goes on to talk about this a little bit. Now, some of the feedback I'm hearing, I am only speaking to this from other reviews. I don't normally like to do that, but I haven't been able to see this yet or get a pre-release, is that it's somewhat, I don't know, it's not great. At least that's what I've been hearing. Have you heard any rumors or anything on this?
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So like I say, we'll check into it better. Hopefully I'm completely wrong on that, and it's absolutely wonderful. I like the Captain America character. Mm-hmm. I've liked all of the past iterations of it, including the most current ones. So hopefully, hopefully this will not be the case and will be continued to be something good.
Netflix wants its partners to follow these rules when using Gen AI.
So Gen AI is generative AI, just what that means. And again, you know, if we're seeing this used pretty much in everything now, it's across the board. And as time goes by very quickly, the generative AI tools we are using don't have the artifacting and other things like you used to see to be able to know that it was AI generated. So along with that, there's starting to be some rules, or as Jack Sparrow would say, guidelines, because I think that's more what these are, to deal with using AI in a, you know, a respectable manner, that you're not doing anything you shouldn't do. So Netflix has come out with this saying that they understand that AI is out there. It can be used to enhance things and they have no problem with it, but they want it to have a few different regulations, including things like it doesn't recreate identifiable characteristics of unowned or copyrighted material or infringe on any copyright protected works. Okay, that one makes sense to me. And we've talked about AI in the past, these type of things, you know, can be now used to remove watermarking from copyrighted images. So there are some things where that's kind of going in a strange direction. Generative tools use do not store, reuse, or train on production data inputs or outputs. I think this has to do with intellectual property as well. And, you know, dealing with some of the different things that are used, they must use these tools in an enterprise secured environment to safeguard inputs. So what they're talking about here is basically material that you really don't want getting out to just everybody. And if you're using computer software, AI, or anything else, and your stuff isn't secured properly, you can have a leak of these things. Just ask Metallica about their primary, you know, audio reel that was about 15 years ago, 20 years ago now, maybe even a little more than that, that started the MP3 Napster wars and all that kind of stuff, that their music was available for download prior to them releasing their album by like 3 months. So a lot of that went in the case from this. And what's come out of it is this idea that if you are using tools like this and have material that needs to be kept private, embargoed, whatever, until it comes out, that you want to make sure that what you're doing and the equipment that you're doing it on is secured properly, including the use of AI. And then the other one, which is a big one, segue to strike on this, and it's one that is kind of a problem, and we're still seeing it come up, is that you don't use AI to replace or generate new talent performances or use union-covered work without consent. In other words, recreating somebody and having them do something that they never actually did, or using somebody's character or likeness and not paying them to do that. Because this has been happening too, you know?
Yeah.
So these type of things, I can definitely see having some requirements out there. And they're going to make sure that the partners that are producing for Netflix are following these guidelines. I don't know. To me, this just sounds like some common sense steps that you would want to take to be ethical anyway. I know in the past we had a guest on speaking for Meta, Facebook, also talking about these things and identifying AI generated content. I also see that on YouTube where it'll come up with a label that, you know, some of the stuff has been generated or altered is a tag. Although I also know that sometimes just from doing some experiments with this stuff, AI is getting so good that it isn't able to identify it anymore. So, you know, that's the thing too, is the technology increases. But I am glad to hear that they're trying to put down some guidelines as they were, because I think it's a good idea to start with that. And again, I am someone that I have no problem with artificial intelligence at all, but I do think that actual performers, artists, and so on should be paid for their work. It shouldn't be stolen and it shouldn't be replaced. In using it, like we've talked about a few weeks ago, is something to give you an idea for something, and then you hire an artist to take that to the end, I'm fine with that. But those are two very different uses of the same kind of technology. And like anything else, it's not so much that the technology itself is good or bad, it's just how it's used.
All right. The Trump administration promised a fourth wireless carrier. America got a hot mess instead. That doesn't sound good.
All right, so we're going to be talking about phones a little bit later, so I won't go into the detail and the specifics of the technology here, but this was announced that in August of this year, they were going to have this new network as competition using Dish Spectrum to be able to run mobile phones. All right, great. You know, more competition is good. I have no problem with that, except that this is the last week of August, and we still haven't seen this. It's been delayed. And there's some problem with the feasibility of doing this. And I think this is what's coming up a little bit. They've pointed out, like, for one thing, that the starting price of the monthly wireless plan is $47.45. And that number does exactly coincide to President number 47 and 45 on the terms. That's where that number comes from. It's an interesting origin there. But that being said, that price is higher, like double, than a lot of the other carriers charge for the same thing. Now, I know we use Google Fi, and that costs less. If you were to go with the most basic thing on it, it's under $20 a month for unlimited voice. We have some upgrades on it for the unlimited data and stuff, and that's still around $30 a month for everything, including when I needed it last year, international access from England and Iceland and all of that. So I can see where it would be difficult to break into a market from this. The other thing that's out there that is hard to get complete clarification on is that initially when this came out, there was a claim that all the phones would be built in the United States. There's just one right now that they're talking about. That quietly disappeared from the website back in July. And when asked questions directly on this, the answers that have been given have been things like the T1, that's the name of the model of the phone, is being assembled in Alabama, California, and Florida with the goal of using as many U.S. parts as possible. And I think they're figuring out something that I know as an engineer that needs electronic parts, is a lot of the components that are required for these things are simply not made in the United States. It's not even like you can pay more to get it. They're just not made here. And as a result of that, it would make it very hard to make not just a cell phone, but any piece of electronic equipment that really is entirely U.S. made can be assembled here. The components are going to be sourced from other places. And, you know, going back a little bit to our retro show last week, I was watching a video when we were preparing for that, that Computer Chronicles had done back in the 80s, and they were at the Manufacturing Center for Commodore 64 computers in California. And it was all U.S. made, down to the chips and everything like it, but that is really just not the case anymore. It hasn't been for a long time. I'd love to see us be able to do that again, but I don't know if it's feasible. It's been attempted a few times by a couple of different companies that have really fallen on their face trying. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. So it's going to be interesting to see also if this even comes into being a thing or if it's just going to get delayed. You know, next month, as we're already out of the time period that it was supposed to have been actually put into operation. But again, I wouldn't mind seeing some more competition for the wireless carriers. As everybody knows, when T-Mobile bought Sprint, I didn't think that was a good thing either. But, you know, at the end of the day, less competition does tend to run up prices. So we'll see what happens here.
Ninja Gaiden Ragebound is a perfect reimagining of the classic series.
All right, so the last time I played Ninja Gaiden was on my, 8-bit Nintendo, I think. So that's been a while. So the new version coming out is being met with pretty good ratings from the critics. It's a side scroller and it's a hack and slash, which would be, you know, expected from these type of things. It's been released on the Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and Series S last month at the end of July. What do you guys know about this game or the series in general?
I know absolutely nothing.
I've played two versions of it, back on PlayStation, PS2 and PS3. I found it to be quite an interesting game. As far as being ninja, I don't know if the stealth mechanic seemed a little lacking, but as far as combat and other things, it was quite fun.
No, that's cool. And I'm glad to hear a positive. What I remember back when I played it 25 years ago, and obviously not the same issue in the franchise, but I liked it too. It seemed like a good game. It was interesting. It was fun to play. So I could see where, you know, as long as they've kept the original to it, and this is like a spiritual successor to the franchise, is where it could be really fun to play. I do think I'll pick up a copy of this and check it out. I'll have to do it on my PlayStation 4 since I do not yet have a PlayStation 5. So as long as it's out there, we can go ahead and give it a shot. And boy, is that going to light up the comments. All right, what do we have next?
All right. Well, it'll be probably shadowed by, you know, anything Star Wars.
Hey, you know what? I'm just happy. I got a Pac-Man, an arcade Pac-Man yesterday.
I know.
So, or Pac-Man Plus, so it's the new version. So I'm really on top of the video game thing right now.
I'm still waiting for you to get that fancy Star Wars one. That'll
be cool. I'm working on it.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to sell their Star Wars Empire Strikes Back or Star Wars Return of the Jedi 1983 color vector machine, go to userfriendly.show and let us know.
All right. Mandalorian star Katie Sackhoff basically didn't work for 3 years after Star Wars show because she didn't understand her character. It broke me. Okay, I have a little bit of a problem with this whole title of this article because I thought she did a good job as Bo-Katan.
Yeah.
I really liked the way the character was. It was a complex, complicated character that I thought she handled really well. So what have you heard?
I think there's probably a lot more going on here than we know about publicly. And I know of some rumors. I don't want to jump into them because I haven't been able to confirm anything yet. But if I do, I will circle back to this in future weeks. But it does seem like, to me, this is unusual because, number one, Gretchen, I completely agree with you. So just a little bit of background on this. She played a character in Mandalorian, obviously, season 2 and season 3. And she was Mandalorian.
But prior to that, she did the voice for Bo-Katan in the Clone Wars series, the cartoon. Clone Wars.
And she has a great deal of acting experience, too. I think she was in a number of other things.
Oh, she was in Battlestar Galactica.
And stuff. And in my opinion, has always done quite well. I've always liked the material I've seen from her. I've never really felt like she was bad. I mean, if she didn't understand the Mandalorian character, she did a really good job considering, in my opinion.
I agree. It's a complex character. It's a character who comes from a noble family. They are warriors. And she didn't agree with her sister, who was made the Duchess, the leader of her world. And they had opposing views, and she was aligned with the guy who was in charge of Death Watch, and who's kind of like this radical jerk. And she did a good job of playing a very detailed, complex, strong female character. And yeah. So I'm not sure. I think she did a good job. I hope she hears me tell her that. So all right, let's go on the next thing.
Now, the first time I saw her was in Law and Order, and I think definitely she's able to play, you know, a good different kinds of characters and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
She even played herself in The Big Bang Theory. She shows up in Howard's fantasies as herself, you know, talking to him. And she has a sense of humor, too.
So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Now, I think everybody knows by this point, they're not doing a season 4, at least right now, of Mandalorian. They're releasing a movie in May called The Mandalorian and Grogu. And from what I'm seeing, she's not in it. So I don't know. My best guess, my hunch is there's more going on here than what has been publicly talked about.
Well, in something close to my home, Nevada targeted by cyber attack. Specifics are unknown, but there's no known risk to personal data.
So this was announced last Tuesday that this had happened, and they've said payroll data was not affected. They said that in-person state services will resume this week, so that must have been shut down on that. But they haven't really released anything beyond that as to what actually happened.
Well,
I know
Bill Snodgrass just got through saying to me before we started the show that the DMV was closed because of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I know a lot of state websites were down, phone lines were not being answered, operational, and on. So it was a pretty intense attack. And I know back when I was still working in Nevada, I had a chance to see the cybersecurity team in Carson City, you know, where they do all of this. And they've got some really good people focused on it. And this is type of thing has always been a concern that they try to watch out for. You can't get it all the time. The bad guys will eventually get around the block, so to speak, which is what it sounds like here. But it also sounds like from what is being reported, that they had enough security in place that even though there was a breach that was enough to shut a lot of stuff down, it doesn't sound like any personal information had been compromised. So, you know, that's, I guess, a very good test of how well you've done your encryption and proper setup and all that kind of a thing. They're not saying that people's information's been released or anything like that. So, you know, I guess that's kind of a good thing. None of these are ever good, but sometimes it's good to know that at least it is possible to have a breach like this and still not have a total disaster.
Yeah.
All right. UVI Interactive Movie to debut at Venice International Film Festival. So what's this about?
And it's debuting on September 3rd. It's in the 17th century Venice. And like you say, it's coming out of the film festival UVI. It's like movie, but it's pronounced UVI. Okay. So that's where that name comes from. And the idea of an interactive movie is kind of interesting. And I know from time to time they try doing different things to keep movie production all that fresh. And I totally get it. But I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to. You know, I don't even like that when you're going to a live performance and the performer like calls to you from the stage, you know, and asks questions and that type of thing. If I'm going to a movie, I'm not sure I want to be on, you know, so to speak. So that being said, there are a lot of people that would disagree with me on that. And a lot of people that do like interactive experiences and that type of a thing, where this could be actually something kind of creative. The first thing I thought of when I saw this was something that was tried a number of years ago called Smell-O-Vision. And this actually was a thing. They had a movie that during specific parts in it, scents were pumped into the theater. and you were supposed to smell different things that were actually in the movie. And number one, I think we can all think, how could that ever go wrong? Now, they didn't go that direction, but they had problems like the smells were delayed. The smells would mix together. It didn't come out quite right.
You know? Oh, so, no. You know, you're talking about interactive experience and entertainment. Blue Man Group comes to mind.
Yeah, Blue Man Group was great. You know, and that I love stuff like that. I'm not saying it's a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. I'm just saying this could be, if it's done well and it catches on, it could be something really unique. It could be a fad. I don't know where that's going, but I'm going to really be interested to see what the critics say about this. I am unfortunately not going to get to Venice next week. So we'll have to go by what we find to be reported. So anyway. All right. So as promised earlier, we're going to talk phones a little bit. And the new iPhone is being formally presented next week. And this time of year, we get to see a lot of new technologies coming out of these things. Samsung does their stuff usually beginning of the year. So probably January, February, we'll see the updates from them. And unlike it used to be with mobile phones, it seems like there aren't a lot of manufacturers anymore. Questions come in about all this. If I don't want a Samsung or a Apple branded phone, do I have an option? And when you're buying something that's now usually well over $1,000, it's a good thing to see if you're going to get something that you actually want and that you can use. And if there are some other things out there, and there are some, one of them's the Google Pixel series, which is not unknown. It's pretty well known. And we've all had them in the past, and I think have had very good experiences with them. I really have no complaints.
Yeah, I liked it. It was good. It
generally,
was good
it's a little more cost effective. Pixel 10 Pro is out now, uses the Tensor G5 processor. The one I got to test out is 16 gigabytes of RAM. You can get up to 1 terabyte. That would be kind of interesting. It's an OLED screen, which 120 hertz OLED screen, which was kind of cool. I mean, that's like sharper than my high-end television. And it includes 7 years of updates, and the suggested retail price for that model is under $1,000 by $1, which is actually a good deal for what it is. And Google has also had some cost-reduced options, I'm sure they will here again too, that allow you to get most of the features, but maybe plastic instead of a metal case and that type of a thing. One of the other ones that I thought was kind of interesting is a thing called the Nothing Phone. And I actually hadn't heard about this, but it is something that's been out there for a while. This is version 3 or the third generation of it or whatever that they're doing. And 12 gigabytes RAM, 250 gigabytes upgradable storage or 512, depending on the model you get. Also an OLED system, slightly bigger screen than the Pixel. The camera was interesting because it's 50 megapixels, both front and rear. And which is, I mean, you know, how sharp do I want my picture to be? But one of the things that I really thought was cool on it that was thinking outside of the box is it has what they call a glyph matrix. And what it is when the phone is off or not off, but when you don't have the screen on, it has this circle that's kind of like a pixel display a little bit that gives you if a text comes in, who it's from, you know, those kind of notifications and things. But it was just a little bit different and something that I thought was kind of cool. We're going to cover the new iPhones when they come out here. In fact, I'm hearing a rumor that there's going to be the first foldable iPhone, so that should be interesting. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions and your comments. We want to hear from you, userfriendly.show. And check out our weekly Tech Wednesday blurb. I'm going to call it a blurb going forward because it's a minute-long thing that just gives you an update on what's going on during the week. And guess what day it goes out on? Anybody have an idea?
Wednesday.
Gee, I don't know.
Oh, boy. Yeah, Bill got it Wednesday. You get the prize. TechWednesday.show is the website to get to them directly. This is also available on the briefings on your smart device. Instructions on how to add it are on the page. So trading card games have been popular for a long time. Not so much with me, I have to be honest going into this. I've tried them. And there are a lot of people that very much enjoy them. It just wasn't something that clicked with me. But these are things like Magic the Gathering and some others like that. And for those that seem to enjoy them, they really do enjoy them a lot. And a lot of them get very good ratings and people, there's a big fandom around a lot of these different franchises and different things like that. And someday I'm going to have to give this a shot again, because maybe I missed out somehow on figuring out what these are and why they're good. I don't know. What do you guys both think of trading card games?
They were fine when I was younger.
I could see them being very portable. Like if you're, I don't know if kids still have Recess, but you could have it in your pocket and play at recess, you know?
I could see that. My other concept is that they're quite a money sink.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting too, because there's one game that kind of stands out, and looking at the way these things are played, because like everything else these days, a lot of this stuff has a virtual version. And some of these virtual trading card games, you still buy the cards for real money, but you don't have a physical card. It's a picture on a computer screen, right? So some of them have been taking some novel approaches of trying to create the cards as NFTs on blockchain so that you can sell your NFT. I mean, you know, so there's some different ways that these things are being approached. And I pick on Magic a little bit. Part of it was is because it was, for me, so complicated. It's like every turn there was a subturn. Now, when I first played it, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
But later on, you had to go through all this stuff. And then the other part of it, I don't know if this is a normal thing for these games, but the group I played with, if you lost your card, you didn't get it back.
That was,
and I didn't like that.
That was definitely who you played with, not standard.
Yeah. Right.
So, the one thing I have to say is a positive. I found one Magic card in the bottom of a box of stuff I got at a garage sale that was turned out to be quite valuable. I don't even remember what it was now, but so some of these do sell for quite a premium if they're in good condition and rare, you know, which is, again, something I don't think you could do really with a virtual version of it, because you just make another copy of it. Now, if you're doing an NFT, there would be some kind of idea that you quote unquote own the card, whatever that may be, on an NFT and can sell it that way. But at the end of the day, to me, that was always really strange. The physical version of it still had a little bit more going on. I didn't like actually losing my cards. I guess growing up in Nevada, though, it's, you know, gambling like anything else. Maybe that was
I would have said
Nevada
no.
And isn't elsewhere.
You can't say, no, I don't want to play that way.
Yeah, you can do that. And I did that. And that's why I haven't played since.
Oh.
I haven't been invited back.
Sounds like your friends were jerks.
Yeah.
Your friends were jerks. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That's a whole nother conversation. But anyway, so whatever the case may be, we're going to be joined by James Sherwood from The Vault here in a little bit, because he is going to be talking to a guest about a Disney version of one of these trading card games that is actually very popular and very well rated, called Disney Lorcana. I think I'm saying that right. I hope I am. And it's one, from my understanding, that isn't quite as complicated to play. And I don't think you lose your cards necessarily either. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit better from that standpoint. But yeah, it surprised me a little bit in doing the research for this to find out how many different games like this there actually are. I knew there were some. I didn't know there were as many. And it's in the hundreds of different systems from what I was able to see, maybe even a little more. So there's a lot of things to get into. It reminds me a little bit of one I did like that was out a few years ago, which was a pirate game. I don't know if you guys remember that. You got these little...
I have those.
Cardboard ships, yeah.
Yes, yeah. They're plastic, and you can build them. I have a huge collection of them, thanks to Jeremy. And I'm not sure what to do with them. I'm thinking of possibly selling them.
Of them too. I was looking them up for the same thing you were, to see what they are. And there's a few that if they're in there, you'll pay off your house.
Oh, really?
Those are quite sought after. I don't know if they're made anymore, but people do still want them.
I have some of the display boxes from the stores. Oh, okay.
So anyone that would like to pay a lot of money for that, go ahead and email us at userfriendly.
Hey, I can use some money.
We'll have to see what they are. And, yeah, you know. But, you know, all things being considered, it is worth looking through your stuff just like you would for a classic baseball card or something, because there's a lot in there that is definitely quite valuable. And for those that enjoy these type of games, they really seem to and are very positive about them. Like I say, I might have to throw my hat back in on one of these if I get, let's just say, with a group of people that doesn't try to steal your cards. So, you know, there we are. So anyway, let's go ahead and jump to the interview, and then we will come back and talk about this a little bit more. So with no further ado, here comes The Vault.
Hi, this is James Sherwood. I'm coming to you with The Vault. And with me today, we have Kimber Knuth. Kimber's going to talk with us a little bit about the trading card game Lorcana. Hi, Kimber.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm great.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe a little bit about the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a lady wearing many hats. I am an elementary school teacher, so that takes up a bunch of time. I have got two littles of my own. One is six, one is two. And I also have a podcast, The Lorcana Muses, that I do with my friends. And just moved up here to Oregon, and yeah, it's pretty great.
Well, thank you for introducing yourself. So what got you into Lorcana? Or actually, let's start out a little bit before that. What is Lorcana?
Yeah, so Lorcana is, as you said earlier, a trading card game, which that is going to be similar to Magic the Gathering or Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh!, one of those types of games. And this game is set in the Disney universe. And it is essentially you using cards, creating a deck to race your opponent to 20 lore. And along the way, you can challenge their character so they can't gain points with them. You can do trickery to get points really quick. And it is just a lot of fun because you see characters from all of these Disney franchises that you know and love. Like, we're getting a Goofy movie. We have DuckTales, Tailspin, Jungle Book, Frozen. So everything from really obscure to really popular. And all of those characters just mashing together into this trading card world.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. Can you tell me anything about gameplay? I've played Magic the Gathering. I played Doom Troopers back in the day. I played a little bit of Pokemon. Tell me a little bit about how Lorcana works.
Yeah, so something about Lorcana that I really enjoy is that in gameplay, you have your turn, and within your turn, after you've gotten your cards, you can do things almost in any order that you want to. You can make resources, which is called inking in this game. You can play characters. You can have them sing songs like Let It Go or Beyond the Horizon from Moana. You can have them do so many different things. They can challenge. They can go on quests, which that's how you gain lore. And all of those things can happen whenever you want. You want in your specific turn. And then when you pass it over to your opponent, that is their chance to both respond to your board and continue building their own board. And so I feel like a lot of people who have joined the Lorcana community are people who liked when Magic was a bit more simple, more less jumbled with having 15 different steps each turn and subturn.
That makes sense. I've played a little bit of Magic recently, and I know the turn order has gotten very specific and whatnot, and the free form from Lorcana sounds like it could be very interesting to try.
It really is, and a lot of times gameplay matters very much with how you, as a player, decide to order things, and it can really change a lot of outcomes. So it can be as simple as you want. It's very easy to learn, but it's very difficult to master.
Okay. How long have you been playing?
So I have been playing for a little over a year, and the game is 2 years old.
Okay.
And it actually all started because my husband had been playing since the very, very beginning. He's a huge Disney fan, worked at Disney World the whole bit. And we had a really close friend group that eventually they heard about it, and they were like, ooh, we want to start doing this too. And so all five of them were playing, and I was the odd duck out. And so I like to say that they had a friend intervention, and they rented out a private room at our local game store. All of them brought their different Lorcana decks, and they were like, we'll have snacks, we're going to have Mexican food for lunch, so like all of the traps are being set for me to love this. And then I got to play Lorcana with them and try out different styles of play, which that is what ended up hooking me and getting me excited about the game.
Nice. And you said it's only about 2 years old. Mm-hmm. How many cards do you think there are in the game?
So each set has 204 cards. There are currently 8 sets. So
1,632 cards, roughly.
There we go. That's how many. And we actually are at a really exciting point in the game where the first rotation for Core Constructed is happening. And so in things like set championships or the Disney Lorcana Challenge events that happen across the nation and even across the world, those are running primarily with that Core Constructed format. And so the first 4 sets are being rotated out. And this coming set features lots of reprints, but also some really great new mechanics in the game. And it's kind of a perfect time for people to start playing.
Okay. So, I will admit, I have been a little deceitful. Kimber actually got me into playing Lorcana here a little bit ago, so I've tried a couple of games, tried a couple of decks. It was a lot of fun. That part about it being a little bit more simple than Magic is dead on accurate. So yeah, it's very easy to pick up, very quick to play. One of the things I really like about it is last time I played Magic, it was a Commander game.
Mm-hmm.
And that Commander game took 2.5 hours.
It can be so exhausting. I watch friends play Commander and I'm just like, if that sparks joy, I love that for you, but that's not me.
Lorcana, we sat down. My first game, I think, was about 20 minutes long. So very easy, very quick to pick up. A lot of nuance to it, so it's not a super simple game,
mm-hmm.
except for the basic rules.
Yeah, so the mechanics of learning to play are fairly simple. It's a race to 20, and you're trying to build up your resources to be able to play cards so that they can quest, get you 20 points. That is cut and dry how you play the game. But figuring out how to best your opponent can be as complicated as you want to make it. And it's something that even my 6-year-old has really loved to play and has beaten adults in our game store, which she always feels very proud of herself for.
So you mentioned different tournaments that you can get into, nationals, I believe you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Things like that. Tell me a little bit about the competitive side of Lorcana.
Yeah, so obviously it's something that's great to play around your kitchen table. A lot of local game stores will have a night a week that is dedicated to Lorcana play, whether it's a league night or some like type of tournament. And that can scale all the way up to about 2 or 3 months ago. They had their first world championship, where they had the top players that had placed at these large regional events hosted by the Disney Lorcana Ravensburger team. And the people who I believe either got top placement at those or top 8 at their nationals or continentals were invited to Worlds. So it was, I believe, 28 players. Only 28, but watching them play was absolutely amazing. They did such cool stuff.
Yeah. One of the things that got me is they talk about the decks can be as complicated or as simple as you want. So mm-hmm. you have these tournament-style decks for these national and now world tournaments. And the decks are outlandish, and you can really have a lot of fun and customize exactly how you want to play.
And Lorcana is a game, and I am an only child that is a daughter. I am highly competitive, and I feel the need to be the best at things because I feel like my self-worth is dependent on it. And that's my own personal problem. But needless to say, I want to win. And so losing generally doesn't feel good, but there have been so many times where I've played this game and I have not won, but I have walked away with a big smile on my face because how can you be mad when Winnie the Pooh is the one who defeated Scar? Like that Piglet, Pooh Pirate Captain, which that's an actual card. He's the captain of this little pirate ship. It's great. When he is the reason why Maui from Moana is unsuccessful. Just seeing all of this Disney mashup and seeing the really cool ways that people figure out to get these cards to interact with one another is an absolute blast. And the community of people that play this game is so unique and special and kind and welcoming and all of those good things you'd want.
Well, and I can definitely vouch for that. I went to one of our local game stores that was having a competition, a tournament. It was just a regular weekly one, and I was immediately greeted with open arms. I had people, I don't recommend it. I bought a starter deck, walked in, unwrapped the starter deck, and started playing. I immediately had people telling me, here's some cards that'll make this a lot better. So it's really something you can pick up. That's something I did want to get into a little bit, was some about the cards themselves. So you have three main ways of getting cards. You have starter decks or beginner player decks.
Single player is the other type. Deck. Which, if you're just picking up a trading card game, I highly recommend making sure it says starter deck. Because the single player decks are great for figuring out new mechanics, but they are not beginner friendly. I made that mistake before.
And the starter decks or the single player decks run you generally less than $20, so it's pretty cheap to get in. And they're a fully functional deck. You can take them, you can play them. I actually placed 14th out of 22 in the tournament with a starter deck right out the deck, or right out the gate. You can also get booster packs. Booster packs are going to run you probably $5 to $10, somewhere in the neighborhood of there. It depends on what series it is. It depends on how rare they are, things like that. But again, not super expensive when you start looking at some of the Magic and Pokemon and things like that that are $15, $20, $30 a pack. And then on top of that, they have what's known as troves. And troves are kind of interesting. Troves are a box that comes with, I believe it's eight booster packs in them, as well as some other goodies. They cost about the same as 5 to 6 starter decks. Or packs. Not starter decks, booster packs. Sorry, I keep getting that wrong, folks. So the booster pack, so you get a couple of them for free. They come along with the particular sets and just kind of lines up what you want to play with them.
And my husband and I, we love getting those troves because you can actually fit an entire playset. So that's 4 of each card that is released in the set. It fits perfectly inside of a trove. And it has card dividers so you can help organize. It's really trying to give you as many tools to be successful. It gives you a way to count your points, your lore. There's dice included that are really fun. It even has little damage counters. It has all of the things you need to be able to kind of get up and get going. And something else that's really great too is that they have a game called Gateway, Lorcana Gateway. And that is even better than a starting deck to start out because it gives you smaller decks and then teaches you about specific mechanics that you can use and builds you up through a few games till you have a fully functional deck. And that's how I taught my daughter to play. And it's one of my go-to ways of trying to trap my friends into playing too.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun with it. An average deck is about 60 cards. I don't believe it can be smaller than 60,
60
right?
is the minimum, and people who are trying to be competitive run as close to 60 as they can because they want to be consistent.
And again, with that deck composition, my wife was playing a little bit, and she was loaned a deck that was entirely dogs and puppies out of 101 Dalmatians yep. and Lady and the Tramp and some other dog characters, and she had so much fun playing it. Her eyes lit up. She's a big animal person. So a lot of fun with it that way, too.
We actually just had a franchise theme day that one of our local community members put on, which is not uncommon to see in different places that you'll find people playing Lorcana. And it was every deck could only have one Disney franchise represented. So you could have a Frozen deck, so it could only be characters from that movie. You could have Hercules, only characters from the Hercules universe. And it was a ton of fun.
Wow, that sounds like it would be pretty intense.
Yeah.
So how hard is it to find a community to play in?
I think that looking at your local game stores and just asking some questions is a great way to start. And from there, most, if not every store that I have gone to, people are very, very happy to help you walk into the game as much as you want to. And here at Arlek, the game store, we moved from Phoenix about 3 months ago, and the community immediately welcomed us. And that's with us bringing our daughter to some of these tournaments because she really loves to play. And they have been nothing but kind. There are people willing to play test if we're trying to change up decks. People who tell us about when other nights, other stores have different league nights available. And you can actually use, there is an app, the Ravensburger Play Hub. Wait, it's not an app, it's a website, I apologize. That you can use to find local game nights going on in your area.
Thank you for that. So, again, Lorcan is what we're talking about today. This is Kimber Knuth with me. So far, been a lot of fun. I've played a couple of games. My family's played a couple of games. Kimber's been talking about how much fun it is. From what I can see, it's cheap to get into. It's easy to play. It's a lot of fun. There's a great community around it. If you're looking for something super intense, probably not quite the right way to go. There you might look more for like a Magic or something along those lines. But if you're looking to just have a good time and blow off some steam, it's a lot of fun. So here on the Vault, we'll go ahead and keep going on with the Hammer ratings. I'm going to give Lorcana about an 8 out of 10. It's a lot of fun. Again, some of it may not be for everyone, but it's really been a boon to me and my family and gives us something to play and talk about. So, all right. Thank you very much for coming on, Kimber.
Thanks for having me.
Any parting words?
I think that anything's worth trying at least once.
All right.
So give it a try.
Well, that's a good motto to live by. All right, everyone. Well, thank you very much for listening in this week, and I will talk to you again soon. Bye.
Now, you know, and just thinking about these trading card games, there's a couple. I think maybe if I try one again, I'll try Hearthstone. It's one that's put out by Blizzard, and since they're the only studio that's never actually put out a bad game, it would be worth trying. The one, by the way, that I was trying to remember the name of and was stalling on before we went to the interview is called Gods Unchained. And that's the NFT game.
Oh.
That you own your these, what is it, fungible, non-fungible tokens, I think is how you say that. And they're traded on a blockchain, kind of like Bitcoin, you know, that same idea, in at least in reference. And you actually, quote unquote, do own a virtual version of your cards, which actually does make a lot more sense because it is something that, while I don't know if I consider that a tangible asset, really, it still kind of is more than ones that are not, right? So, you know, it's just, I guess, your way of looking at it. But I don't know. I don't think I'm ready for an NFT trading card game. I think I'll stick with Hearthstone or something that uses physical cards if I'm going to do this again. So we'll have to see where we go from there. But anyway, so before we drop off for this week and wrap, I do want to invite more questions. We got a lot in from last week's show on retro games and stuff, a lot more than I have ever seen questions come into the show. Obviously, there's an interest there, but keep your questions coming in because we're going to hit that again, obviously, later in the year just because there's the interest. But we really do our programming based on your feedback and what you want to see. And it is very appreciated to have all the comments and questions and things coming in. Until next week, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0, copyright 2013 to 2025 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.